You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Peter Sear. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Hi, I'm really well, thanks.
Awesome, awesome. Pete, just a real quick one then before we dive into the conversation, and just maybe a brief background on who you are and what you do for those that don't know you.
Yeah, so I did a PhD that finished in 2021 on empathic leadership in elite sport. So for my research, I interviewed the coaches, the head coaches of 20 teams from 9 different sports all around the world, all playing at all competing at international or top national level, so sort of successful coaches, if you like. And I asked them about the aspects of empathy and the role it plays within their role. So from that, I gathered sort of themes in the data and gained an understanding of the role that empathic leadership plays and how that compares with how leading in sport was 20 or 30 years ago, for example, and what aspects of empathy and leadership there are. So and from that, I wrote a book about it, Empathic Leadership: Lessons from Elite Sport, which all your listeners can buy whenever they want. And from that, I've had lots of inquiries from people working in sport and other industries, really, about that aspect of, I guess it centres on relationships, really, about how to understand perspectives, emotions, get the best out of people, make decisions about the roles of people. And often it's suggested to me that it's an aspect of coaching or leadership that people don't get so much from training courses. You know, it's all the technical stuff and everything like that, but the human side of it is not that full. So I'm obviously glad to help.
Awesome. Yeah, you've got my mind flowing already in a few different directions. Let's just start. You know, you mentioned there's, you know, something that a coach maybe could or should be doing. Just before we get into that, then, how do you see the role of the coach? And obviously that will differ in different environments, different, you know, ages and stage and whatnot, but fundamental role of a coach, what does that look like to you?
Yeah, and different eras as well. So in my interviews with coaches for that research, one of the things that came out is that the role of the coach, like 20 or 30 years ago, or from when the head coaches that are working now were athletes, was very different to how it is now. And that gave me an area to focus on for my work, really, because there were practices, for example, like in football, a Canadian coach told me, for example, that his experience of playing sport back 20, 30 years ago was that the team sheet would be slapped on a door at the end of training on Friday. The players would come and have a look at it to see if they were on it. And if they were lucky, they'd get a glimpse out of the window of the head coach driving out of the car park so that he didn't have any, you know, comeback on it, on his decisions. Somebody else told me that they had a number to ring where the head coach's secretary would tell them whether they were in the team or not. So it seems like, going back, there were a lot of examples anyway of coaches being quite scared of the confrontational relationship between athlete and coach. Whereas now, everything is about the quality of that relationship. So you look at the coaches at the highest level, and the last few years, it's probably been symbolised by the Jurgen Klopp hug, I suppose. It's not just about hugging, but that is symbolic of the kind of relationship that coaches have with their players. It's close. The hug doesn't come as a surprise. These players are and coaches are familiar with each other, and they've got a depth of relationship. And so coaching now, as I see it, is predominantly about that relationship, because that relationship offers so much advantage to the coach. It tells you exactly what sort of character you've got, how they react in certain situations. So task delegation as a coach, if you're looking, the classic example, I suppose, is penalty taking. We saw it last night in the game last night. If you're an empathic coach, then you will understand each individual and how they react in different situations. So you might have a player, going back 20 or 30 years, a coach might see a player in training, banging penalties away, putting them wherever he wants, and look like the most competent penalty taker, but not know the character of the person, the history of them, or understand them at a deeper level to know that in a high pressure situation, they're not going to behave in the same way. So these little details about character and personality have so much advantage for coaches.
It just got me thinking about a few things, because obviously society's had a massive part to play in that, surely, right? People have changed, and I guess culture has changed around sport in particular. It's become more professionalized, and then, you know, it leads me to think about, well, if you use football as an example, probably, you know, maybe suggest maybe look further behind than other sports in kind of developing a model where there is loads of different specialist coaches, right?
Yeah.
It's probably more in the last 15 years in particular where you're starting to see coaches doing different types of roles. Not to say that it's brand new, but it's probably not been as common as it is now, where you've got maybe, you know, coaches working in possession, out of possession, coaches working with specifically just defenders or whatever that might look like. And then I guess, you know, the terminology, even the language used around the role of that individual, maybe what used to be considered as a manager is now a head coach, or vice versa. And maybe, you know, I guess the nuances that exist between the differences between those roles as a manager and a head coach, and the perceptions and the realities and the roles and responsibilities linked to that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, there's so much there. I mean, you just mentioned the language used by head coaches. That's another example of where we can consider the role of empathy. So often I've had athletes tell me that they get coaches come back from a weekend at UEFA, learning some new part of the game, and then they come back and use exactly the same language that they've been taught in the classroom in Switzerland to what they're giving these young players on the football pitch. And it's like they're talking a completely different language. So the role of the coach is to understand how to deliver certain information to athletes. In order to do that, there's a very important thing that people need to remember when it comes to empathy as a coach is, we often talk about empathy as putting yourselves in the shoes of other people. But importantly, there's a real important nuance here that it's about becoming the other person as well in that moment. So it's no good a coach thinking, right, if I was one of these players now listening to what I'm saying, I'd understand it. It's about that coach thinking, if I was a 17-year-old from a poor academic background, would I understand what I'm saying now? So you have to become the other person, not just imagine yourself in their shoes. What else did you mention there? You mentioned about the role of the coach
versus that of maybe the manager.
Yeah. So I thought there was a really good example. I saw one of the Tottenham manager, Ange, is a player's talk about him and how he met them and got to know them as individuals before agreeing to sign them. But then in training, et cetera, he had quite a distant relationship from them. And I thought that was really interesting from a modern day football perspective, because all you hear about is these close relationships between player and head coach. So his role seemed to be what I'd consider more of a manager, where the coaches were having the relationships with the players. And maybe it worked. I mean, we all know the story behind the season for Tottenham. It worked in some respects in one competition, because maybe he was getting the information he required from his coaches about each individual character, and that relationship was doing that job. And the distance enabled him to have maybe a more holistic perspective of what was going on, and not fall into one of the traps of having close empathic relationships with athletes, which is the temptation to be biased. So if you take a particular liking to certain individuals or characters, you might then make decisions that are not in the best interest of the team. So that distance gives you that that protection from that. So I'd see that the difference between a manager and a head coach. That's what I'd immediately think of anyway.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously you mentioned that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your research is largely built around elite environments, probably senior coaches at the top level.
Yeah.
But I think these are key things that, I guess, principles that will affect coaches at any level, right? In the fact that they have to build those effective relationships with the individual. And I think there is now that common challenge sometimes now. Well, is it after the result, or is it about developing a positive environment for the players to develop? And I think, you know, sometimes that can be misconstrued as, right, if you're working in a senior environment, that it's not important to worry about the relationship. But also that's probably, like I said, a change in generations and societies over time, where there's probably been an acceptance, okay, that we, you know, you can't operate in that world anymore. Because I guess, you know, if you do think back maybe 20, 30 years ago, maybe some of the practices which were, you know, carried out, if you like, will probably be considered borderline abusive now, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, so you mentioned society's perspective as well. So the expectations are completely different for coaches now. You know, young kids, they come expecting a closer relationship with the coaches, whereas in the past they might not, you know. But looking at this change in relationship from the athlete's perspective, whether they're youth players or adult players, that has a significant impact. I just talked about the way that head coaches can use that information in order to appropriate tasks and things like that and make decisions about selection or what's going on. But from the athlete's perspective, it's really important the effect that has then. If they see that a head coach is interested in them as a person, sees them, there's a thing in psychological research called mattering. I don't know if you've read any papers on that, but so it's the idea that they feel they matter. And that's huge. If you feel you matter and you belong and the coach values your input. I heard you talking on another podcast about feedback. Yeah. And you were asking a couple of other coaches what you'd look for in a feedback session. And one of the things that sprung to mind for me was what the coach could learn from the athlete in that session.
100%.
Because that's what this sort of style of leadership that I've written about is to do with, is gathering as much information from the athlete as possible, because you're going to be making decisions based on all these things you know, and you're going to be able to predict the way they perform. You're going to be able to recognise certain body language or things they say more accurately because you know the person. So any situation where a coach has the opportunity to learn more about a person, that's like a treasure trove, you know. That's really important and valued by these top coaches now.
No, you're spot on. You know, it reminds me of a conversation I was having with a group of coaches yesterday. And when it comes to coach development in particular, sometimes the perception of myself is, well, he's quite direct. He's quite, he's on us. But I have to also kind of set the environment to also reinforce and reiterate over time. It's nothing personal. I'm here about it. I'm trying to help you. So, you know, I need to help you in your development. And sometimes you might need just to be told that message. And I think, you know, we are bored. I think we do borderline sometimes as coaches and even as coach developers, and sometimes making sure that, you know, if I'm working with Peter, Peter feels good about everything I say. And I think there is a bit of, you know, importance around making sure Peter's, like you said, it feels like he matters and he's got value. But also there's the other challenge of holding people accountable to certain things. And I think that's where sometimes coaches now, I often observe, maybe let people get away with a little bit too much because they don't want to offend or upset or, you know, dishearten them in the consequence of, oh, we're not going to get anything out of them now if we do them.
So the task of a coach is always paramount. You know, what they want to get out of a session, that's paramount. But you've got to consider the characters you've got within the setup that you're coaching. And it might not always be that arm around the shoulder. It might be, I recognise, I understand who this person is and I know what they need right now, and it's not an arm around the shoulder. So it can be quite a tough reaction from the coach. The difficult thing, obviously, is that you're working with a group of people, so knowing how to respond to the group. But again, that's about knowing the group and knowing how they react. And I've had, one of the other things that just came to mind when you were talking there is what I always start with when I work with coaches is self-empathy. So self-awareness. So the way you're heard and the way you come across. And it reminded me of one, a Scottish coach, a Glaswegian. And he was coaching a female team, not in football, in a different sport. And he had comments coming back from him through another coach that the players all thought he was very upset and angry with them all the time. And it wasn't. It was because he was Glaswegian and that's the way he was expressing himself. It was just his personality and his culture. That's the way you talk to people. And so there were other things that happened where he said to them, I want you at training this day, and at the game. The rest of the time, I don't care. And so because of the way they perceived him, they thought that he was saying he didn't care about them. He just wasn't interested in their lives. But actually what he was meaning to say was, I don't mind if you enjoy your lives a little bit, you know, you're human beings and everything. But he didn't understand how he was being heard. So one of the most important things for coaches to work on is their self-awareness, how they're perceived. And that's not so difficult a thing to start. So we have sort of a couple of different types of awareness. One is how we perceive ourselves, and another is how others perceive us. Mm-hmm. There's a psychologist called Tasha Urich that says in a book, she's got another book out now, but I forget what the last book was called. But she said, if one person says something about you, it's an opinion. If two people say it, it's a bit of a pattern. If three or more say it, then you can take it as fact. So you've only got to start asking people, you know, how do I come across? Or you can get people to, like a psychologist like me, to come and observe your behaviour in sessions or whatever. But often it's about working with coaches over a period and understanding what drives them, what issues they have with their own psychology, and then to understand themselves more than anything. And that helps them understand how they're communicating with others.
I think it's such an important piece, and it's something that, you know, I've become more conscious about, especially, you know, since I've become a coach developer, but more recently in the last couple of years in particular. That, well, I remember having an interaction with a coach a few years ago, and he was like, yeah, you're a bit aggressive. I said, okay, that wasn't my intention. He goes, no, I don't think you're aggressive, but I can see why people think that.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I said, okay, interesting. So then it's made me consciously think about, oh, okay, I've got to be a bit more careful with my language and what I say and how I say it. But also if I do catch myself in the moment where I might have been perceived to come across aggressive, just cap it off by that clarification, like, this is not personal, it's nothing like that. It might have come out the wrong way. But I think something else that was quite interesting is when I first started getting into coach development, I'd often have situations where, let's say we've had this conversation today, I've just finished the course with you, I might see you in 6 or 7 months, and you're like, oh, I'm still thinking about that thing that you said. Yes. And in my head, I'm thinking, I've got no idea what you're talking about. I'm just flowing with the conversation in the moment, right? And it's like, oh, it got me to start thinking, oh, some of the things I'm saying to coaches is really having an impact. It's really imprinting in them.
Yeah.
So it got me really more conscious around, oh, what am I saying?
Yeah.
When am I saying it? How am I saying it? That's leaving that lasting impact. And if I can be more deliberate and intentional, knowing that that's the impact I can have.
Yeah.
If I can be a bit more conscious around what I'm saying, maybe I can be more effective with the messages I leave behind.
Yeah. And one of the ways you're going to learn that is to have dynamic communication with athletes or coaches that you're working with, so that you're just talking to them all the time so that they feel comfortable enough to mention something like that. If you're having regular conversations, it might not be in a feedback, you know, position. It's just while somebody's, you know, warming up before a session or juggling a ball or something, just having a little chat there just to get to know them, how they're feeling that day, and anything about them. I had coaches that told me that they often, for away games, would take it in turns who they sit next to on the bus and just talk to them about their life and what their interests are. And there might be a moment where all of a sudden the coach finds out that a player is also interested in foreign films or something like that, or dance or something rare.
It's just something, but the coach is aware of themselves.
So there's a connection there.
Yeah.
And it's just more information that you can use in whatever way.
So I guess, you know, linked to that then, you know, obviously you mentioned one or two little ideas there, but you know, if there is a coach listening to this right now, you know, regardless of what level they're working at, what are some things that they want you maybe encourage them to think about from the get-go in terms of, right, are they actually building an environment which is fostering effective relationships?
Yeah, one of the, I'm sure all coaches are aware of this, but I'm not sure to what extent they're aware of it. But one of the things that I've learned is that coaches are being observed the whole time by players. Even when they think they're just putting a net up or a flag out or something, there's somebody watching them, which, you know, it feels like a bit of pressure, but that's something to keep in mind, that it's not just on the training pitches. The whole lives of that coach are being observed, and people are talking about them. You know, if the coach has an athlete go to them with an issue or problem in their personal life, perhaps, and the way the coach that deals with it, that whole thing might not come out. But if that player then sees somebody else struggling, he's more likely to say, look, go and see the coach about this. I spoke to him about something a little while ago and he was great about it. He really understood and everything like that. So it's a really sort of transparent life that a coach lives. You know, people are aware of what sort of person they are more than ever. Once you get to a higher level, the media are scrutinising you as well, and a bigger fan base is scrutinising you. And there's all these multifaceted relationships you have to have as well with sponsors, media, people above, people below. It's huge. So it's very important for a coach to develop themselves and work on themselves so that they can be authentic, because if they're putting on a mask just for coaching sessions, A, people will see through it, but B, it's draining. That's going to lead to burnout. You know, you can't become a different person while you're a coach. You need to be authentic and be the same person all the time.
Yeah, it reminds me of a great quote. I'm not sure who actually said it, but every time I hear it, I think it's spot on. It's like, you know, just be the best version of yourself because everyone else is taken.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's that piece around authenticity. And I think sometimes just recognizing that the authenticity is what allows a relationship to foster in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. And that develops trust and gets deeper and deeper.
Precisely. And I think part of that is that, you know, the honesty and allowing yourself to be vulnerable, like at times as well. Like I know as a coach, and even more so as a coach developer, because that's probably the majority of my work at the moment, where I'm working with coaches, I'm constantly telling them, look, these are the things that I think I can help you with. This isn't really my area over here. Yeah. And I think that piece is important, because obviously part of the coach's role, yes, you want to support and develop the individuals that you're working with, but fundamentally you can't help them with things that you don't know about.
Yeah.
It's important to recognize that.
The person you said that to, if you empathize with them, how's he reacting to what I've just said? The most likely reaction is he's thinking, this guy's got my best interests at heart. You know, he's putting me first in this situation. So you're, in his estimations, you've just gone up a notch there by being, you know, he can see you as authentic, that you care about him. So that's adding to your reputation. And if you build on your reputation like that by authentic sort of altruistic, empathic behaviours, then when you say something, that gives you more power. So if your reputation's up here and you say something, you want your players to do something, they're more likely to do it if you've got that sort of reputation. So everything feeds into everything else about the whole sort of idea of empathic leadership.
100%. I think, you know, you just reminded me there of sort of something I often say. I think everything matters. Everything matters. And you've got to give everything meaning in that respect. Maybe that's just my perception, my view on life, I guess. But I often go back to the idea of, well, if I'm going to help someone as an individual, I need to be sure that the stuff that I'm helping them with is stuff that I know. And, you know, there's another great quote. It says, you know, if you teach someone something, you get to learn it twice.
Yeah.
So you want to be clear in, you know, you want to have clarity in what you're saying. And I think part of the coach's role is it sometimes like recognizing that actually, do you know what? I haven't got the answer, but let me connect you with Pete because he might help. He might be able to help you with that.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, it's now, like you said, there's more power in that relationship because it's like, actually, he has got my best interests. He's even in a position where he's not been able to help me. He's been able to help me. If that makes sense. So, listening to that, then I think I'm thinking about all those coaches who maybe are, like you said, putting on a mask, maybe. All those, you know, there's probably an element of holding up a mirror that needs to take place. How would you begin or ask coaches to begin thinking about whether that might be them falling into that bracket or not?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I mean, the whole idea of empathic leadership and going to help clients is a difficult problem to solve because the people who need it most are those least interested in empathy. So that's the problem I face all the time. And I often get athletes say to me, I wish our coach had come and see you, you know, whereas the coach is totally unaware. They think they're doing a great job and, you know, there's not an issue there. And there might be reasons for that. You know, that's often the problem too, is that there might be personal histories about a coach that they don't want to go back into their own head so much. You know, they don't want to go deep. They see things on a very surface level. They've got things packed away in boxes in their mind or whatever, and it might be affecting them a lot more than they realize, but they're not prepared to do that sort of work. So people have to be ready to do it. And I think more and more people are, you know, because they realize they can't get away with just putting on a mask. They can't fake it. They've got to be authentic and have relationships with athletes, that there's more people coming to people like me.
It's interesting because you just got me thinking about some experiences I've had recently. And so I remember an experience about a year and a half ago. I was working with a coach, and just to give some context, I was on a coaching course, and there'd been about 10 or 12 coaches that have gone on, and they delivered a session. Now, I've kind of been a bit self-aware of myself and understood that, you know what, when I'm reading off a session plan, I don't really understand it. I need to kind of see it. Now, there's been about 10 or 12 sessions gone. All the coaches, they presented it on a tactics board and whatever. And for me, it doesn't really make sense, but it's good for, I guess, other people might be able to learn from that and absorb information in that way in an effective manner. I just find it's more effective just for me to see it, because I can just picture it and see it immediately. Now, there was a coach on that course, and he did that. And it was the first session of the day where I actually got it. But it was also the last session of the day. So my thing was, straight away, I realized this probably isn't going to work. So I said to him, I don't think this is going to work. And he goes, no, give me a chance to try it. And I'm thinking, no, I don't think it's going to work. And it wasn't malicious in any way, shape or form, but I looked at that situation, and he was adamant he wanted to try it. I was like, okay, cool. So I was caught in a bit of a dilemma as a coach developer in that respect. And sometimes I think to myself, well, linked to what you were saying, is it sometimes just, even though we know or we have a feeling or our experiences tell us one thing, that it's just best to let them get burnt, if that makes sense? Because once they get burnt, they might be more open to the reflective conversation.
Mm.
I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, my first thoughts when you were saying that were that you've understood that you learn in a certain way. And that's really important for you to know and understand. But that's also a great example to you for when you work with other people, other coaches, other players, that each of them will learn something better in a certain way. And that's something else that getting to know each individual can help you with. It can help you teach them in a certain way, communicate even in a certain way. You know, somebody is going to respond a lot better to somebody shouting at them, whereas somebody else getting shouted at, their head to go down and things like that. So everything about coaching, even though it's a team environment, there's a lot more individuality got to be considered now than before.
But just linked to it, because you've got me thinking there as well, and it's a question I often wrestle with sometimes, and I get players in particular and coaches in particular to think about is, well, as an example, you've mentioned there, some people might like being shouted at. Some people might be like asked a question or whatever the other methods might be around it, right?
But they might not like it, by the way.
Yeah.
But it might get the best from them, and then exactly they'll reflect that on that, maybe through a feedback session or on their own, and then they'll realise he's got the best out of me there. I didn't like it at the time, but so it's a real depth of knowledge required to get that right, yeah, you know?
100%. And I think linked to that is also that perception of the individual. So, like, for instance, if you've, I don't know, if you've gone through experiences, you've been shouted at, and you don't think it's helped in any way, you've now got a negative perception of that type of coaching or that type of interaction or communication, right? Whereas the challenge I often throw to coaches, well, you might not like the challenge, you might not like a question being asked it. You might say, oh yeah, I learned from someone telling me how it's done and just being direct with me. And maybe this is just my curiosity and my mind just goes in off in different directions with it. But sometimes, well, is that really the case though? Or have you just had bad experiences with that method?
Yeah, yeah.
In which case now you've labelled that as a bad egg and a bad way to approach things because the experiences that you've had with it might not have been impactful and effective, you know, and it could be that someone shouted at you, but maybe didn't shout at you with the right language.
Sure.
Or whatever. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, so I think that's why the higher up you go in sports and the more money that's involved, there's a lot more work going on in this area with people understanding themselves and how they react to certain styles and it. Like I know at Real Madrid now, for example, instead of having a psychologist look after the players, they have individual psychologists, which makes a lot more sense as a I'm training to be a psychotherapist as well. So the thought of a group of people who are interacting all the time, having the same psychologist when they're talking about each other in sessions and that's a very difficult situation. But if that's individualized and you've got your own psychologist talking to you about you, and it's, you know, that nothing's going to be transferred to anybody else because they're not talking to anybody else anyway. That helps, and it helps the development of that individual because the relationship can be more honest, more trusting. And I think that's obviously impossible going down, you know, lower levels, but it gives us an example about how important self-awareness is to coaches and players.
It's quite interesting because obviously, like you say there, you know, just because of resource, it is obviously going to be more challenging at the lower levels, but it's still just as important, right? And I often say to coaches all the time that you think you see your players an hour a week on a Tuesday night, or you see them on Saturday for a match day or whatever it might be, but actually that's not the limited, that you're not limited to just that type of contact. Contact doesn't have to be face to face.
Sure.
And obviously, age and stage and scheduling plays a part, and obviously the considerations for it. But fundamentally, what other work could you be doing, which might be considered remote, and actually be able to connect the dots later on?
Yeah.
So, you know, things like I talk about around coaching is, you know, can we give our players maybe surveys or some sort of feedback system where they can provide feedback and they feel open to provide that feedback, and you know, you then connect with them through that way. And because, you know, I think it's a great method, right? And one of the biggest things I talk about with the coaches that I work with in particular is that importance around checking for understanding and clarity of communication. So link back to what, you know, that conversation we were speaking about previously where I ask you for feedback or providing feedback for players. Well, have you put yourself in the position where you're understanding what they're thinking first?
Mm.
Because they might understand everything you need them to understand. Therefore, the coaching interaction is just, all right, keep going.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So the feedback one from players, especially at youth level, is really interesting because a problem that coaches often fall for is that they listen to the loudest one in the room. And it's often several players who will never speak up or say anything. So I can understand surveys and things being good, particularly if you anonymize them, for example, because you get, you might get things that you didn't realize were going on or ever come back to you. But ultimately, if you work on that relationship and you can have any conversation with players, whether it's on the phone or whatever, that's the best way to get the real truth of what's going on. That that depth of relationship, that's what we're aiming for, a depth of relationship with a person, so that we know what their week's been like. We know what's going on at home even. Obviously, this is more, I mean, professional coaches at a high level talk to me about things like this. And it, I know it's a lot more difficult if it's your Sunday team, your kids team or whatever. It's a lot different. But any information you can get about what's going on in the world of that person is information you can use to make decisions. Having said that about making use of other styles of communication like forms or telephone or whatever, one of the things came out of my research was that logistical information and everything can be transferred via text or whatever, like what time we meet in, whether that's fine. But any other any other conversations, and that in, even logistical information might be a an avenue to get in a conversation with a player. But any other conversations, I gave them choices about how the modality of the conversation, whether it was good to talk over Zoom, in person, on the telephone, text or whatever. And all of them said to me, if you can be in the same room of somebody, that's the best way. So that's the best way, because you can pick up on things that we're talking to each other now. We can see each other on a screen, but we can't look at our body language. We can't see whether one of us has got a foot that's tapping away impatiently or a hand that's shaking or we're fidgeting a lot in our chair or things like that. And each of those cues or bits of information that we might pick up on will represent different things for each individual. So by knowing each individual really well and by spotting those impression cues, we can tell what's going on in the emotional world of that person in that moment. And so any excuse to be in the same room and have a conversation one-to-one with an athlete is should really be valued in my eyes.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting because you just, as you were speaking, it reminded me of an experience that I've spoken about on the podcast before, and it's going right to the earlier years of my journey. Probably, I think I'm probably a year into coaching at this point. And I used to have this group of players I was working with. I think they were under 15 boys. And there was this one player, I just couldn't put my finger on it, right? And he was the first one there on Saturday morning for training, but he was always late for Tuesdays. It just used to frustrate me. Absolutely drove me mad. I never quite got it. And then one day I just said, you know, I'm just going to pull him aside and ask him what's going on. And after that conversation, it just changed my whole perception of how I need to deal with him. Because what we established is that actually he's traveling, you know, during rush hour from the opposite side of London to get to my session. And I'm thinking to myself, it just changed my whole perception, because it's like, you know, there's literally probably about 10 or 15 football clubs in every town in London, right? Maybe more. And he's coming from the other side of London to come to me. I'm thinking, so he changed my perspective on, oh, this kid's always late. He's frustrating me, to, wow, what am I doing that's making him want to do that?
Yeah. But you went into his world and understood the reality of the situation.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It allowed me just to, you know, not treat him differently, but appreciate what he was dealing with.
Yeah.
Or the experience that he was having.
That's really interesting, because what you thought was a lack of commitment, actually, when you understood the whole situation,
was full commitment, yeah.
Yeah.
It just completely changed my perception. And right, okay, well, how much do I really know about what I'm doing with these guys? And I guess, you know, in my early years, probably still not as effective as I might be now with building those relationships and recognizing those cues and whatnot. But, you know, it's humans at the end of the day, right? We're going to pick up on when someone maybe is in their best state, or when someone's feeling a bit down, or when someone is a bit more relaxed, and whatever that you know, situation might be. And I think it's important for us to understand, like you said, those cues. And the more time we can spend with each other to do that, in person, the better it will be, right? Because it's through those, especially in today's society, where everything is like this over some sort of platform with a screen or whatnot. I mean, I'm not sure about yourself, but I find myself having to make more efforts to actually get people together.
Yeah,
because it's so accessible outside of
that. Yeah, they're not
used to it. That creates its own challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And that, you know.
Yeah, it's
really interesting, especially. I was just going to say it was really interesting because especially the knock-on effect for those kids that, you know, they did talk about a lot of, for those kids who went through COVID.
Yeah, sure.
And they were growing up in, you know, especially in the early formative years where now they've now been almost deprived of that interaction, that social connection.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to kind of think about.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And one of the problems when you're building relationships and empathizing with somebody is if you've got a shared experience, it's a lot easier because you can reflect on that and draw from how things made you feel and think, well, maybe they're feeling like I felt in that situation, even though you're trying to see it from their perspective. But that's a difficult thing to achieve when they've gone through something like COVID and like the social media world that they grew up in. It makes it more difficult for us to see and understand them. But going back to the looking at people's behaviour in that, a Premier League manager told me that he always watches every player arrive that day so he can look at their face to see what's on it, you know, because if you get to know people, it doesn't take long before you can start to see what kind of, where they're at when they walk in, you know.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
But yeah, the social media thing's really interesting as well, because that affects the communication. We just talked about the importance of being in the room with somebody, and you said about getting somebody, everyone together is difficult because they're not used to it. But also there are just little nuances, like a women's coach in Glasgow told me that she was communicating a lot via text, and one of her players came to her and said, you know, this emoji doesn't mean that, don't you?
It was just
one emoji meant something completely different to her, to all her younger players. So they're all having a giggle about it. And she's being serious and she's got no idea what their world is. So she said that was a real sort of learning thing for me. And I've had to sort of ask them every time I use an emoji now, am I using this correctly? Is this me communicating what I want to communicate with you?
It's quite interesting, because another thing that I talk about a lot with coaches is understanding social cues from different people from different cultures, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, in some cultures, I guess in British culture, quite often it's deemed as disrespectful if you don't maintain eye contact.
Sure, yeah.
Right? But actually in other cultures, it's the complete opposite. It's very disrespectful to maintain eye contact. Yeah. And I think those are some of the subtle things that I guess coaches can overlook and maybe not consider as actually... It's just two different worlds operating at the same time here. And I think that bit is so important, right? Because, you know, I see it sometimes and it's interesting. I've got a lot of coaches that I work with. I remember this coach said to me, I was working with recently, and he said, you know what, you're different. I said, what do you mean by that? Because you're different. I don't feel like you know, that you're here to assess me. You're here to, you know, do anything of the sort. I feel like I just know you. And I was thinking, okay, well, what do you mean by it? Because I don't know, maybe it's the way that you talk. And I think, oh, I'm just being me.
Exactly.
And if that's what you connect with, then happy days. And if, you know, if I need to use maybe different language to connect with you, and that's fine as well. But it just got me thinking, like, okay, cool. To your earlier point, just how much appreciation and value people place on authenticity.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
And, you know, not having to put a mask on and try and be someone that you're not. And I guess, you know, linked to that then is the... There's no shortcut, is there?
No. And people will always see through it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it works in the short term, but eventually people will see through it and think, this is not... I'm not getting a real understanding of who's coaching us here. Is just, you know, he's not being here.
Would you say then that it's become more important to have that authenticity over time than it was maybe 20, 30 years ago based on your experiences?
Yeah, I don't think people had the choice then. I think that's just the way things were. I think there were rare instances of when we look back and we read things about certain managers of football teams being people, you know, like, or good man managers. I think they were an example of closer to what the style of leadership is now. And we think of maybe Terry Venables, Bob Paisley at Liverpool was meant to be a very sort of human. He worked in I think he was a physio to begin with. So he's probably used to maybe a more sort of empathic, compassionate side to him that helped his leadership. But people talk about him very warmly. But a lot of managers going back to that era, it was very much telling people what to do, shouting at them a bit louder when they don't do it. And that was it. And I've had coaches come to me. When I was doing the research, a coach who is older than me and comes from that sort of era and was coached like that himself and became that kind of coach, when I was talking to him about this sort of empathic leadership style, he said, it's too late for me. He said, I can't change because people who are coming into the game, and I had this from other coaches as well, you're a different type of person, becomes a coach now. Whereas if you were a certain personality, perhaps more sort of regimental type, then you'd look like what everybody perceived to be a coach. But yeah, now it's somebody who's more human. But the guy that said that, he evolved. He realised that in order to stay in football, he had to either walk away from football or evolve as a coach, develop a side to him that enabled him to have relationships and depth of understanding with his athletes.
It's interesting because as soon as you said that, I said, well, I think the first step is the fact that he's recognised it, right?
Yeah.
It's that self-awareness piece again. The moment he recognises it, well, now he can do something about it.
Yeah.
If you don't know it exists, then how are you gonna tackle it, right? And I think that piece is really important because, again, some of the things I try and encourage in coaches about how reflective are you? You know, what, and especially in today's generation and with all the technology that's out, there's so many different ways to capture some insights around that. It's like I was speaking to coaches yesterday and saying to them, like, even as a coach developer, I still record myself.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
Right. I still record myself, not because and it's not for me to share with you, but no, this is for me. Because, you know, coaches often ask me, oh, can we get a copy of that later? I said, no, it's not for you. It's for me. I want to know how well I'm operating in this space. Because, you know, one, I think, is leading by example to show them that, you know, even if I'm doing it as a coach developer, then there's no reason that you shouldn't be doing it as a coach. I'm not saying you have to do it in the same way, because you might not have access to the same technology, but pretty much everyone I know has now got a smartphone. I don't know many people without one, or any people without one.
Yeah.
All you need to do is just, worst case scenario, if you haven't got any other thing, just put your mic in your pocket, record. And you can, even if it's just listening back audio,
yeah,
how have you spoken? What did you say? You might not have the visuals to go with it, but it will give you some data. It will give you something to look back on. Oh, actually, I probably could have said that differently. Or, maybe I was sounding quite aggressive, or maybe I wasn't loud enough, or whatever it might have been, right? And it's just an opportunity to reflect. And I think, do you find that, you know, not based on your experience, that maybe there's a real reluctance for some people to want to reflect because maybe they're just so...
Yeah, I think
in their minds, but I'm on the right track. Everything I'm doing is right.
Yeah, you do meet people who think that they kind of gloss over everything and think everything's going well, and they're kind of in the dark about what the reality, you know, they're not seeing what's going underneath, you know, and they're not prepared to go there. And others, some people evolve and some people just start performing badly and end up losing their job because of it.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's interesting because I was having conversations recently with the coaches or coach developers, Rob, and we're trying. I'm curious as how do we get messages to land earlier? How do we get messages to land earlier? Because what I often find with myself, and I've had experience with quite a few coaches, is where I've gone through a bit of a journey, they've been reluctant, resistant, and all of a sudden, a penny drops.
Yeah.
But it goes back to what I was saying earlier. I think the penny drops when they realise, oh, I've just been burnt a little bit. Maybe I need to perk up my ideas and open my ears a little bit more. Yeah. I don't know if that, I don't know if you've got any experiences similar to that, or more importantly, how do we tackle that?
Yeah, there's always a lesson in getting hurt. You know, we know as we grow up as kids that we all remember one thing we did that makes us never do it again, don't we? You know, so there's always a lesson there and one that we really goes deep and that we'll remember. But I wonder if doing more work with coaches like self-awareness sessions where people sit in a group and talk about their perspective and maybe be brave enough to have feedback from other coaches, knowing that everyone is there to become a good coach and others in the room want to support each other do that. The honesty of having that reflection in a group would be really powerful to if sometimes there are obvious things that people do personally, the way they communicate with people, that might be really hard to hear, but if it's delivered in the right way in a group where people feel it's an empathic sort of climate in the room where everybody's looking after each other and we're there to all become good coaches, then it can be really helpful. And it's not always easy, but the benefits of it might make it worthwhile.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because obviously within that, then it, you know, comes the idea that actually, in a lot of coaches, coaching can be a lonely space.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
It can be a lonely space, right? Because
especially when you're losing.
Yeah, exactly that. Especially when you're losing, and you know, especially if you're working at the top level and you're losing, because that now you're thinking about all sorts of things like your livelihood and whatnot. Mm. I guess for younger coaches, it might not be necessarily a career at this stage, but the same pressure still apply. And I think it goes back to something that you were saying earlier, that sometimes with a lot of this stuff, the people that you're engaging with are probably not the people that you should be engaging with. Mm. And, you know, and how do we tap into the people that haven't yet realised, oh, actually, I could probably do a bit of this.
Yeah. And this self-awareness is important on so many levels. So even when people consider whether a job or a role is right for them, the more they understand themselves, the more sort of self-empathy, self-awareness they've done, the more work they've done on themselves, the more they'll understand where they will best align. I know Bielsa, for example, when he went to Leeds, he took a few days walking around Leeds, talking to people, understanding the place, seeing if he could feel that he could align to lead their club, if you like. So having some real empathy and understanding for the local community that he's going to represent. And I don't know about you, but I often see coaches at a top level go to clubs and you think, well, that's not, they just can't align because those fans expect something that coach isn't famous for giving. So the alignment just isn't there. And there's either a lack of self-awareness, some sort of hubris about the coach that he thinks, oh, once I start winning things, they'll come round or something. But there seems to be a lack of alignment, often on playing style, sometimes on culture. Just like, I don't know, often you see a complete change of culture. I've been so impressed with the change of culture on the footballing side at PSG, for example. The way that I think a lot of fans were getting fed up with the antics on the pitch, the rolling around, the moaning at the referee, and the way they play all through the Champions League. They seem like the most sort of sporting team. Like nothing's more important than the football. And all these other things were like a distraction. And when they've recognised that and changed their culture and placed all their energy into playing, look at the success that's brought. I mean, obviously the money's helped to some extent, but the culture seems to have evolved into something that is a winning culture.
100%. It's, you know, if you link it to that point, on the polar opposite is probably what's happening with Man United, right?
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the culture's changed, the people that maybe upheld the culture and, I guess, instilled the values right across the board have probably been, you know, slowly disregarded.
Yeah, and emotions and empathy are contagious. So the opposite is as well. So it runs right through a club. If you get a leader come into somewhere, a club like that, if you get a manager come in, they might be the most empathic manager in the world, but if they're not getting any empathy from above and the staff are all working in fear, then it's very difficult to change a whole culture like that. And it's going to take a long time for the ripples of that leader's behaviour to change the way people are. So it's a very difficult situation they seem to be in up there. And the people at the top of the club seem to be doing, you know, a lot more damage than they are, particularly in the way people feel, because the way people feel when they go to work will affect their performance and it will affect their relationships. And as I say, emotions spread, you know, they're contagious. So it's really important.
Just on that then, you know, so now I'm just thinking about, you know, coaches listening to this. And I guess if they are listening to this, they're probably, I'd like to maybe consider them to be a bit more intentional than those that maybe might not be engaging in this type of content. Sure. But there's probably still some people within that space that probably still haven't even touched the surface of the self-awareness stuff. Intentional, curious, but maybe not yet there. What are some initial steps that you maybe suggest for them to start thinking about, just to kind of really open that Pandora's box, if you like?
Speak to people. Start with your friends or your family if you want, but speak to people. You know, how do I come across? How do you think I come across to athletes when I'm working? Or do I ever come across in a way that you think doesn't help me get where I want to go? Do you think I'd ask, just ask any questions like this? Am I consistent in the way I behave? Are there things that change the way I behave? Am I then projecting my anger onto the way I talk to people or something like that? Any sort of patterns of behavior that you can learn about yourself from other people, because the people closest to you are observing you the most. They'll know you the best. So there's probably a lot of information just in your immediate circle. But then doing what you do, record your sessions. And if you want, just review them yourself. If you've got mentors or colleagues on the coaching staff, maybe say, would you just spend an hour going through this with me and tell me what you think of this? How do you think they're coming across? You could even invite one or two players into listening to that if you felt comfortable doing it, to see how you were being heard by them. Because as we've discussed, at youth level in particular, we're talking about almost a completely different way of living and relating to other people. So it'd be really interesting to get their feedback.
Yeah, but more important than anything, those are the people that you're trying to impact.
Yeah, exactly.
It's important to know what they think and what they perceive of you, right? And and even linked to that, you know, if you are working in youth football, I say this to coaches all the time, I think the biggest trick that we're missing as an industry in coaching is, how often do we bring the parents into the process?
Sure, yeah.
Rather than just try and push them away. No, actually, one, you know, how often does a parent say to you that, you know, you're a really good coach? Okay, but how often do you ask them why?
Yeah.
How often do you get the clarity and the objective points of reference from them, or the subjective point of view from them, to understand why they think that? Because sometimes it could just be a passing comment.
Yeah.
It could just be a passing comment. Now, you haven't really got any information as to why or how you are a good coach. And the same goes for, you know, your players. So one of the questions I often ask players when I'm working with them on a regular basis, now, just, you know, it could be an impromptu conversation at any point in the season, you know, but just out of curiosity, when do you feel like you've received your best coaching from me? Right? Because that will tell me a couple of things. One, what they perceive to be good coaching.
Sure.
Two, what they feel like, you know, where and when and how I've had an impact on them. And, in, you know, it allows me to kind of dig deeper to find out, well, you know, what was the outcome for that? What did that do to you?
Yes. If I can, I'll just mention one thing about the language you use there. Like when you ask, and it's really important, I think. So maybe to reframe that question, instead of saying, when do you think I did my best coaching? That's talking from your perspective about coaching as a as an entity or as a verb.
So more specifically, looking at the player, so when have you received your best coaching from me?
Yeah, or say, yeah. What have I done that's made a difference for you? What,
sure.
What have I helped bring out or teach you that has brought your game on or that you've really valued? So you're taking it away from the word coaching because that's your world. That's not,
yeah.
They're not so interested. They want to know that they're interested in moments that's going to resonate with them. If you ask them, were there any moments this year that clicked in your head, this has made me a better player?
Yeah.
And there, I think you'll get closer to the truth of what's going on. And parents is really interesting as well, because the role of a leader, the parents, you know, being empathic, you have to be empathic to the parents as well, understand their world as well. So there's lots of people that are sort of stakeholders, if you like, you have to understand. But I think that's a great idea, is talking to the parents, because they're the ones sitting in the car on the way home. You know, that's the information you really want, right? Because they're going to tell the truth about what they think about the team, what they think about you as a coach and everything. So any parent that you can get to give you that information, that's going to be really helpful for you going forward. And if you explain that's your motive, is that you want to be a better coach, mm-hmm. so then they're going to buy into that.
I think more importantly, they're going to come at it from a perspective of their best interests. They're sure. You know, they're interested in making sure that you're giving the best coaching possible to the child.
Yeah, that's right.
So you know, they've got no reason not to be authentic and honest in their feedback for you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's really important, but you just got me thinking about all the different avenues that we can go in and impact on coaching. But, you know, coming back to the empathetic leadership, then, you know, you said the self-awareness piece is key.
So in the research, I broke it down into 7 aspects. So starting with self-empathy, relationships, communication, empathic accuracy, which is what I talked about. When you know and understand people on a deep level, then you can predict their behavior or their reactions to things that are about to happen. The fact that these coaches are athlete centered, so they're always considering what's best or what the world looks like from the athlete's perspective, not from the coach themselves. Empathic climates, which will just develop from an empathic style of leadership. So, as I said, empathy spreads. And if athletes in a team see that the coach is treating people in a certain way, then they'll start treating people in a certain way. These things are contagious, as I say. And that goes right to the very sort of relationship with rivals, even. I had a handball coach talk to me about a fierce rivalry with a local team that her team had. And she didn't believe that she was helping the situation very much at all, because she was always arguing and shouting with the opposition coach, and they had quite a volatile relationship. And she did a lot of sort of reflection on this and decided that she was going to change it. That they were both coaches working in the same industry, in the same sport, they had a lot in common and a shared perspective, if you like. So they became closer, they started being more respectful on the line. And what she got from the team through that was the players were treating each other a bit better on the pitch. There was less aggression, unless she required it sort of tactically. So she felt that she had more power over her players, more influence, if you like, over her players, because their minds were focused on the game rather than what was going on the touchline or this basis for a fierce rivalry rather than a competitive sporting rivalry. So that can change very quickly. The other thing is developing empathy within the team. Mm. So there's certain things that coaches do you're probably aware of them, where in order to get a group of players to start playing for each other more, understand each other more, and to learn to communicate in the style that's best for each teammate, then they need to know and understand a little bit about them. And I know a lot of coaches do things where they ask players to give a little bit of a representation of their biographies, where they've come from. I remember Virgil van Dijk talking a little while ago in an interview about the fact that he had to do some dishwashing at hotels or something when he was a youth player, and the reporter saying, "Oh, you come from a tough background then." And he said, "I've spoken to Mane in my team." He said, "I didn't come from a tough background." So, you know, he understands what football means to Mane and where he's had to go to get it. I know Salah's had a very tough development and as a person as well. And if you understand these people around you and what it means to them to get to where they are and how they react to different forms of communication, maybe because of their personality, maybe because of their culture, maybe because of their biography, then you can behave towards them in a way that gets the best from them and the best from each other. And people who know each other's stories will run and fight harder for each other.
It's so interesting because, you know, one of the things that it brings my mind to is this idea of engagement and getting people's attention, right? And I think it's almost recognizing that actually in order to get people's attention, this, the information that you're providing them has to be relevant to them. So, you know, like you said, because of what football might mean to Mane versus that of Van Dijk, you might not need to do as much.
Yeah, sure.
To
yeah.
get his attention, because this is life or death situation for him.
Yeah,
this is make it or you know, or fail to survive. Whereas other players in other people in different environments might not necessarily have those same pressures and same attachment to the end goal or the outcome, right? And it kind of then brings me on to thinking about, I'm sure you've come across it and read some of the stuff around it, and John Maxwell's stuff around the five levels of leadership.
Sure, yeah.
And you know, essentially taking the players from feeling like they have to listen to you to want to listen to you.
That's right, the buy-in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you almost get that permission bit, and obviously then it comes to the idea of, well, if you can influence the senior players in the environment,
yeah,
not necessarily because of age, but seniority from a standard of social standing maybe or whatnot.
Yeah.
If you get those guys on board or those girls on board, now everyone else is looking, thinking, well, okay, maybe there's something in this. Maybe I need to come forward.
Yeah, which is why a lot of head coaches at the top of the game, they use as a buffer, a leadership group, don't they? You know, all clubs have that now. And maybe that's something that could go down to grassroots level. You know, maybe that would have an effect. You know, we don't tend to look at these sort of small details quite as much, I don't think, when it comes to that sort of human side of things. And maybe there's something to learn there. But it's not just about how that affects the perception of other players when they're performing on the pitch. It's everything about their day. It might be having just won a trophy, how certain players will celebrate that. If the players are all aware of each other's backgrounds, cultures and everything, they'll understand, yeah, he won't be doing that because I understand where he's come from and who he is as a person. And that then gives a deeper relationship because player number one sees that he's been recognised for who he is. He's been accepted. The way he feels matters to the group. And that in turn gives him greater engagement, commitment to the team. So it's a sort of win-win.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, that I think it challenges coaches or people in these type of situations to then think deeper around, well, how do we build commonality if this person doesn't do that?
Sure.
Or you know, whether it goes against their values or their beliefs or their cultural systems that they've got in place, right? And I think it's just developing a culture which then becomes truly inclusive. How do you start to appreciate everyone and have an alignment despite all the differences that then exist?
Yeah. Another thing that coaches have told me they do is they have little games like dilemma games where they'll have little groups of players and they put them in. They have cards, like there's different cards games. You can play with a dilemma on it, and then it'll have who in this group is most likely to react in this way, who's most likely to react in this way. So all the time you're making them put themselves in the position of somebody else to understand their world. So it's literally encouraging empathy. Yeah, the other way that coaches can encourage empathy in themselves in order to understand other people is more sort of general in life as well. Just by reading good literature, good fiction, or going to the theatre, going to see films, not action films, but more character films where you're constantly putting yourself in the position of different characters or people in the piece so that you're literally practicing empathy all the time. If you read it, there's a difference between sort of trash fiction where everything about a character and how they feel is often explained and over-explained, where the reader's left to do a little bit more work if it's a better quality fiction. So I definitely encourage sort of more reading of fiction and anything that enables you to connect with and understand the perspective of characters in art. I think it's helpful in any sort of leadership role in any industry.
I'm thinking really deeply now because you literally just brought my mind up to a conversation I was having with some coaches just yesterday. And it was about the role of the coach and being able to effectively develop the performance of the individuals in question. And what you then have is a situation where you've got coaches who maybe actually have an impact on players, coach the players, give them information, whatever, versus that of maybe someone who might be a facilitator. So it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on this, actually, in terms of, I use a lot of analogies when I'm coaching and doing any coach development work, because I feel like it doesn't, you know, indirectly, not that it was intentional in that way, but I guess it has that empathetic approach to it, right? Because you can get them to connect on that level. Take it out of the context of the game sometimes. So I often refer to the role of the coach as being the director. But the director, and it links to now coaching position, where you situate yourself in the environment and whatnot. Are you in positions where you can see everyone's point of view? And, you know, being able to effectively move to say, right, well, if I want to see what Pete's got to see, then I need to be where Pete's standing.
Yeah.
But not in his way.
Yeah.
But I need to get in an eye, you know, in a snapshot view of where he's at. I need to be in and around where he's at so I can see what he might be seeing.
Mm.
And the importance of that, because sometimes our perceptions from this side of the pitch versus that side of the pitch, when Pete's made the same decision, are completely different.
Yeah.
And sometimes not having Pete's full perspective will allow me to make a judgment that might actually not be accurate and correct.
That's right.
Therefore, if my judgment is inaccurate and incorrect, my behaviours and my reaction and my actions off the back of that might then not be appropriate for the moment. Therefore, now we've got a disconnect.
Yeah.
But I often think, well, as coaches, are we sometimes just a little bit lazy? And we have our comfort zone where we like to stand rather than actually what are we trying to achieve here?
It's uncomfortable changing yourself like that and reflecting. This is all uncomfortable stuff. It's not easy. But that perception stuff's really interesting. So I immediately, what came into my head was, and I don't know how practical it could ever be, but imagine if you had like a body cam on a player in training. So when he's in a group or she's in a group listening to the coach, your recording to look back on after is from within that group, and you might hear little conversations going on, or you might just see what you look like standing there, what you're saying, and you actually get the angle that they're coming from. You still don't get obviously the person they are, the history they've got, the age they are, all those things, but it's giving you a little bit more information than you've got if you've got a microphone in your pocket, isn't it? It's that there's a little bit closer to the real world of those players.
100%. Pete, it's, you know, I'm sure we can go down a broad rabbit hole with this stuff, because the thing is, you've got my mind thinking about so many different things, thinking about, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Maybe next time I should do this. And I don't even know if I'll get another opportunity to, you know, correct my error from that mistake there. And it's like, it does frustrate me sometimes, because it's like, well, all right, we can only do what we can do.
Yeah, and we're all evolving. Yeah.
Exactly that. So I guess on that note, in the interest of evolving, we've talked about some of the things that, you know, your research has covered. What would be one thing that you'd want coaches to think about off the back of listening to this conversation?
Just get to know your players more. Just talk to them every opportunity. The less formal the opportunity, the better. Like I say, if it's just someone juggling a ball before you start a session or something, be having a chat to them about anything, the weather, what they did last night, anything. Just get to know them.
I love that. Get to know them, and I think it's a great way to start and finish. Pete, really appreciate your time today.
I've loved it. Thanks.
Getting to know you.
And you. It's been great. Yeah, this is a wonderful podcast. It's such a great thing for coaches to be able to listen to all this. There's so much great stuff in all the interviews you've done. It's brilliant.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. I really do. I think, you know, that's it. When I started this whole project, it was never meant to be anything. It wasn't meant to become a podcast in any sense. It was just, I'm just curious at how I can get better at what I do. Let me speak to people. Let me get to know people. Let me learn a little bit more. And, you know, if other people can be a fly on the wall in the conversation and pick up things that might help them, and happy days, everyone's learning, right?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's a real resource for people. Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care. there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.